Good morning. It's Monday, October 14th. I'm Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, checking in with a crucial Michigan voting bloc, the internal documents TikTok doesn't want you to see, and what was flying in the skies while you were watching football this weekend. But first, to the campaign trail, where former President Donald Trump's messaging against immigrants is getting darker. Reporters from Politico watched more than 20 of Trump's recent rallies and campaign events, and they found that Trump demonized minority groups at every single one of those events, calling immigrants violent and animals, saying they're destroying communities, and that if he's elected president again, he'll build detention camps and conduct mass deportations. Here he is speaking in Aurora, Colorado, on Friday, a city that recently saw about a dozen people arrested for a range of crimes who allegedly had ties to a Venezuelan gang.
The enemy from within, all the scum that we have to deal with that hate our country, that's a bigger enemy than China and Russia.
And he's vowed to not just round up immigrants and deport them, but to prosecute them in new ways.
But if they come back into our country, it's an automatic 10 years in jail with no possibility of parole. 10 years. And if that doesn't work, it'll be 20 years. And if that doesn't work, I guess it's going to be the death penalty, right? The death penalty.
Aurora's mayor, Mike Kaufman, who is a Republican, did not attend Trump's speech on Friday, but told reporters afterwards that concerns about Venezuelan gang activity have been, quote, grossly exaggerated and have unfairly hurt the city's identity and sense of safety. He added that his city has not been taken over or invaded by migrants. The state's governor, Jared Polis, who is a Democrat, also refuted Trump's claims about the city.
Aurora is a safe, vibrant, wonderful place to live, a city of 400,000 people. I want to highlight that crime is significantly down over the last 2 years, 31% decrease in auto theft, 25% decrease in burglary.
Politico spoke with experts in political rhetoric who say Trump's language has ramped up markedly in the last month alone and that it bears a strong resemblance to authoritarians and Nazi ideology. Just last week, in an interview on The Hugh Hewitt Show, Trump said immigrants have, quote, bad genes. Here's media reporter Brian Stelter on CNN.
Every American who ever took high school history class knows that when you're talking about vermin, you're talking about bloodlines, when you're talking about people being conquered, and Trump promising today to liberate Colorado, this sounds like Nazi rhetoric. This sounds like fascist rhetoric. It sounds like white supremacist rhetoric. And just because Donald Trump's not a Nazi doesn't mean there's not an echo of history here.
In response to criticisms, the Trump campaign told Politico in a statement that the former president is simply responding to voters' concerns and fears, and that it's, quote, what Americans want to hear. Let's turn to Michigan now, where the race between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris is extremely tight, and where one voting bloc in particular could make a big difference. Michigan is home to more than 300,000 residents of Middle Eastern or North African descent. It's a state considered critical to Kamala Harris's strategy. President Biden won the state by a slim margin in 2020, just 154,000 votes. For months, Democrats have been worried that U.S. support for Israel's assault on Gaza could hurt them with voters sympathetic to the Palestinian cause. During the primary, pro-Palestinian organizers got 100,000 people to vote uncommitted to protest Biden's handling of the war in Gaza, which is why Harris has been spending time in recent days meeting with Muslim leaders.
I think what we're seeing with the Arab American and Muslim community is a pretty deep divide over whether to support Vice President Harris, one that didn't really exist with President Biden, because I think the community was much more united in not supporting Biden and not wanting to vote for him.
That's Yasmin Abu Talib, a White House reporter for The Washington Post. She says there is real pain and anguish in this community. Many Muslims and Arabs in Michigan know of people killed in Israeli attacks. In fact, an American from Dearborn, Michigan, was recently killed in Israel's bombardment of Lebanon. Meanwhile, the Biden administration has remained steadfast in their support for Israel. This weekend, the U.S. announced it's sending an advanced anti-missile system to Israel, along with roughly 100 American troops to operate it. That's in anticipation of an Israeli attack on Iran and Iranian retaliation. It also marks the first deployment of U.S. forces to Israel since the war on Gaza began. Biden recently told reporters that no administration has done more for Israel than his. Now, Harris has been more outspoken about the humanitarian catastrophe, but she too has underscored her support for Israel. And it's not clear how a Harris presidency would shift American policy on the war, if at all.
I think the biggest point of contention and the biggest point of division and discussions in this community right now is that Vice President Harris has not explicitly articulated a different policy, and people are reacting differently to that. There are people who believe that she will be different because of what she said before, and there are those who say, she's had all this time, she hasn't articulated a different policy, so why would I believe her?
Still, Harris has managed to get endorsements from several Muslim groups and leaders, including one group made up in part by previously non-committed voters. They say Harris might not offer the position they hope to see on the war, but the alternative wouldn't be better.
I think the reality of a Trump presidency is setting in for a lot of Arab and Muslim leaders. You saw this group of imams across a number of swing states write a letter endorsing Vice President Harris, saying, you know, we can't risk the return of a Trump presidency. This is our best chance for a ceasefire candidate and for a real change in policy. Our work wouldn't end on November 5th.
Still, election watchers say, don't sleep on this group of voters. Even a small sliver who stay home or vote third party could hurt Harris's chances and change the outcome of this election. TikTok's algorithm prioritizes beautiful people, even if that beauty is only because of a filter. That's just one of the allegations that's come out since attorneys general in 14 states filed a lawsuit alleging that the app was designed to be addictive for young people and that the social media giant deceived the public about the risks. For context, TikTok has 170 million users in the U.S. 95% of smartphone users under 17 are on the app. Here's California Attorney General Rob Bonta talking to CBS about the suit.
And what we're really talking about here is TikTok holding out to the world that their platform is safe when they know internally that it's not. Internally, they acknowledge the problems of the personalized algorithm, the other features and designs. But to the world, they say we're safe. And it's not true. It's a lie. It's deceptive. It's false statements and fraudulent statements. That's why we're holding them accountable in court.
Because of the lawsuit, we are now for the first time seeing some of the company's internal communications about the risk the app poses to young people. And in fact, we're seeing more than we're supposed to. Lots of information was redacted in public filings, but Kentucky Public Radio discovered some of the redactions were faulty and got access to dozens of pages that had been kept secret. NPR reviewed the material and found that TikTok executives were speaking openly about the app's addictive nature. In fact, research conducted by TikTok found that compulsive usage of the app has negative effects on mental health, including a decline in memory and contextual thinking, as well as increased anxiety. And the documents show TikTok was aware that its platform is bad for young people's sleep, schoolwork, and other personal responsibilities. Here's California AG Rob Bonta again.
This problem lies in the lap and at the feet of TikTok, because they are a large, $1 billion sophisticated corporation. They know exactly what they're doing. How do we know that they know it? Because their own words, their own documents, their own statements to each other that we were able to subpoena through a 2.5-year investigation tell us so.
TikTok's algorithm is hyper-personalized, serving up content in rapid-fire succession, which makes it easy for people to just keep scrolling. When TikTok introduced a time limit tool so parents could put limits on their kids' usage, these documents show not only did it barely have an impact, but also the company measured its success by the appearance of building public trust, rather than by actually reducing minutes teens spent on the app. State authorities in Kentucky connected to the lawsuit said, according to their investigation, all it takes is 35 minutes of scrolling for someone to form a habit and become addicted to the platform. Here's how Massachusetts Attorney General Andrea Campbell described the app's strategy to reporters last week.
It's a result of TikTok intentionally designing its platform to keep our young people glued to their screens, all in the name of profit. That platform has employed things like constant push notifications at all hours of the day and night that prod users to open the app using the same addictive reward system that slot machines deploy. Infinite scroll, where users can endlessly look through their feed to see new videos, causing them to stay on the app for longer than they otherwise would.
A spokesperson for TikTok pushed back against the allegations and defended the company's child safety record. They also criticized NPR for reporting on documents that were supposed to be sealed off to the public. Before we let you go, a few other stories being featured in the Apple News app. We saw some unusual political campaign messaging over the weekend, written in the skies over NFL games. That's because teams from six battleground states, Arizona, Georgia, Nevada, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, played each other. The DNC flew planes to write messages and carry banners that read things like "Vote Kamala," "Sack Trump," and refer to Project 2025. NBC notes that Democrats have been leaning into football this election, particularly given that Harris's running mate, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, used to be a high school football coach. The Harris campaign has run ads during college and pro games, and last month got the endorsements of 15 NFL Hall of Famers. In other sports news, a record was broken yesterday at the Chicago Marathon. Ruth Chepnetich became the first woman to complete a marathon in under 2 hours and 10 minutes. Here's the moment she crossed the finish line.
56, bring it on, Neil Armstrong. We have another woman that has done something just like you. This is amazing right here.
Amazing.
Sub 2:10, everybody.
The Kenyan runner also beat the next fastest runner by 8 minutes. The Chicago Sun-Times notes that their hometown race has become known for records, partly thanks to being such a flat route. 4 of the 5 fastest women's times have been achieved in the Chicago Marathon over the past 6 years. And finally, to other news up in the sky, Elon Musk's SpaceX successfully launched the 5th test flight for Starship, the biggest and most powerful rocket ever built. But that's not the exciting part, or at least not entirely. The exciting part came about 7 minutes after the launch, when its enormous booster, which is taller than a 20-story building, traveled back toward the launch site and was caught by a set of metal arms. SpaceX has been recovering first-stage boosters of its smaller rockets for almost a decade now, but catching a booster this big and in this way is a huge new accomplishment and could save SpaceX millions of dollars. There are many more tests planned before Starship is expected to bring American astronauts to the moon as soon as 2026. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the News app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next. Fortune magazine looks at the legacy of British tech billionaire Mike Lynch, who died earlier this summer when his yacht sank off the coast of Sicily. If you're listening in the podcast app, follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.